Subscribe to The Spectator in our end of lockdown sale and get 10 weeks of the magazine in print and online for the price of one. Not only that, but we'll also send you a bottle of Pimm's worth £25 absolutely free. That's 10 weeks of The Spectator and a bottle of Pimm's, all for just £4.95. Hurry though, this offer ends on Monday, 19th of July. Go to spectator.co.uk/sale.
Hello, it's Friday the 16th of July, and I'm James Seif, and I'm joined today by Isabel Hardman for Coffee House Shots. So, Isabel, the news today, Keir Starmer is on the road. He's launched a kind of listening tour. He's gone to Blackpool with the BBC to listen to voters who used to vote for Labour but don't anymore. How did that go?
I think it probably went as well as we expected it to, in that he did pick up a lot of people who explained just why they couldn't trust the Labour Party, and he had to listen to a lot of criticism on that, particularly people who were actually saying that they just weren't ready to listen to the Labour Party yet. And that's something that he's really sort of majored on over the start of his leadership, was that Labour needed to regain the right to be heard, that wasn't an automatic right, particularly amongst obviously those voters who just abandoned it after generations of their family had voted Labour, that it wasn't going to be a quick fix. I mean, he's come out with this quote saying that I will sweat blood over months and years to earn respect from voters, which for some reason reminds me of Ian Duncan Smith saying the quiet man is turning up the volume, a sort of slightly overdramatic turn of phrase that shows really the problems that the leader finds himself with. But that said, a summer tour where you're out listening to voters after a year and a half of not being able to really talk to people face to face, only really doing Zooms. You know, he's given so many speeches in empty rooms because he's either been self-isolating or because we've been in a level of lockdown that's meant that he hasn't been able to do anything else. I think is not a bad thing to spend your summer doing, not least because the summer tends to be more quiet politically, so you tend to get more attention. It's not just earning a right to be heard from your voters. It's actually earning a right to some space in newspapers and on broadcasters' schedules, which you do get a little bit more over the summer. The problem is that the reason the summer is quite quiet isn't that no one tends to be listening.
Yeah, it strikes me that Keir Starmer has obviously been leader of the opposition in the oddest of circumstances. He still hasn't delivered a kind of conventional party conference speech. Campaigning has been hugely limited because of all the COVID restrictions. And I thought it was quite telling that the people in this focus group telling Keir Starmer they've no idea who he is. They don't know who he is. And I think that's been compounded by that Labour took this kind of strategic decision to essentially support the government on COVID. So in terms of the people opposing the government's COVID policy, it's generally either been, you know, lockdown sceptic, Tory backbenchers on the news, or scientists who think that the government should be more restrictive. Labour hasn't had a distinctive position on COVID. And so that's obviously kind of limited his public impact. How much do you think he will get his wish to kind of move on from the immediate politics of the pandemic?
I mean, I think all politicians are wishing that the immediate politics of the pandemic will be behind them come the autumn. But I think all the signs, as we've discussed lots of times on this podcast before, are that that's just not going to be the case, because we have what's now being described as a summer crisis for the NHS at the moment, which is highly unusual. We normally have a winter crisis for the NHS. We have no guarantee that the summer crisis won't give way to a quiet autumn and winter. Indeed, all the signs are that things are going to be even worse in the NHS over the autumn and winter. We still have the fear amongst Conservative MPs that their party is going to in some way reverse bits of the roadmap and reintroduce some restrictions. And we have ongoing pressure from figures like Chris Whitty for real caution or for certain restrictions to return at some point. And so those battles that we've seen within the Conservative Party and then between Labour and the Conservatives over who should be wearing a mask, when and so on, I don't think we're going to see those disappear off the top of the news agenda anytime soon. I don't know what you think, James.
No, I mean, that's a very fair analysis of the situation. Let's look at two other issues, Brexit and levelling up. obviously one of the big issues for Keir Starmer, which the Tories intend to attack him on, you just have to look at how often Boris Johnson tries to bring up Brexit at PMQs with Keir Starmer, is the fact that Keir Starmer was a Remainer. He was Labour's Brexit spokesman. He, not the first to do so, but he was by the end a strong advocate of a second referendum. How much of an issue do you think that is to regaining the trust of voters who might not have backed Brexit in the first place, but really didn't like the idea of a second referendum, a kind of do-over because they'd voted the wrong way?
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the sort of the polling, the focus groups, and indeed the sort of doorstep conversations that were reported back from Hartlepool and from Batley and Spen when the party thought it was going to lose Batley and Spen suggested that those voters had moved on from Brexit, but still weren't really in the mood to trust the Labour Party. And so it's...
Yeah, it's not the issue of Brexit, it's the, as you say, it's the trust question, right?
Yeah. And that's the difficult thing, is it's one of those things that doesn't get named on the doorstep, but it's already done the damage in terms of whether you trust people. A bit like, actually, do you remember in the 2015 election how we were all surprised by how much tuition fees had been an issue for a lot of voters who turned against the Lib Dems and went Tory in seats that we hadn't expected the Lib Dems to lose. Because I think in Westminster, we'd already factored in the tuition fee row as a sort of something that the Lib Dems had managed to move on from. And even though some voters had forgotten about the row itself, they just couldn't trust Nick Clegg anymore, and so it just became something that, you know, that said a lot about his character. So I think that is one of the issues, just the idea that Keir Starmer, you know, if you found yourself in the trenches with Keir Starmer, would he be on your side? I think is probably the thing that is their sort of suspicion.
Now, Boris Johnson's idea for kind of consolidating his hold on these former Labour areas that turned Tory is his levelling up agenda. He was rattling off in his speech yesterday the kind of levels of regional inequality in England, which will make you wonder, you know, what he's going to say to the party when he finds the party that's been in power for the last 10 years. Now, but this speech, I think it's fair to say, has received a bit of a kind of a collective raspberry of people saying that, you know, yeah, it's another speech on levelling up but lacks policy detail. But Patrick O'Flynn has written an interesting piece for Coffee House saying, no, people, the commentary are getting this wrong. People instinctively get levelling up. Which analysis do you think is right?
I think both, in a sense, in that I think people understand that levelling up is something that, you know, is something that will benefit parts of the UK that have been left behind. They understand that it will probably relate to education, to infrastructure, to the way in which town centres look and feel. But I think there's also an issue that Boris Johnson doesn't quite know in detail how he's going to achieve these things. So I think on education, for instance, it's still not clear what he's going to do in order to level up people's aspirations in left behind towns in the northeast, for instance. He made a very good case yesterday, didn't he, for levelling up actually being something that would benefit overheated southern areas as well as those red wall constituencies that southern Tory MPs feel are getting all the attention. But again, I think it was more about persuading people in his party who don't like the idea of levelling up that levelling up will be a good thing, rather than a kind of policy rich, detail heavy speech. But then again, Boris Johnson doesn't really give policy rich, detail heavy speeches. So perhaps we were sort of, I don't want to say expecting too much of him, because that you can't really say that about a prime minister. But I think perhaps we were expecting too much of the speech itself. And given his ability to produce policies that get him where he wants to, regardless of the sort of ideology behind them, perhaps it's something that we will see the government rather than the prime minister in a vision speech return to in the autumn. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think this is the interesting question, which is, you know, can they put flesh on the bones of this levelling up agenda? I mean, it's quite clear that they know they need to. You know, you've got Neil O'Brien appointed as, you know, kind of former policy wonk who worked for George Osborne, and then Theresa May, you know, used to run a think tank, put in charge of a kind of unit of civil servants working on policies in this area. It's clear that they know that they need to give it more definition, but they haven't yet done so. And I suppose there's an irony here, which is, you know, Boris Johnson has the phrase, the slogan that's meant to sum up his premiership but lacks the detail. Keir Starmer, you think of as a much more details-oriented politician. What he seems to lack at the moment is a phrase to say how a Labour government, a Starmer Britain, would be different. Where do you think the political space is for Keir Starmer? What should be his big idea?
Oh my God.
Because in a way, I feel that your pause, though, is in some ways instructive as well, because it isn't part of the problem.
A pause I was hoping would be edited out. Perhaps I could pass the baton back to you, James, and ask you what you think.
No, but I mean, I think this is part of a challenge, right? Which is, when you've got a Conservative government that is spending big in the way it is, what do you do? You know, you've got the splash on the front page of the Times today suggesting that Boris Johnson is prepared to raise taxes to put more money into social care. You know, when you've got a Tory Prime Minister prepared to do that, it's quite hard to see what the space for Labour is. And the problem for Labour, I think, is that, yes, they can hope that the old maxim that oppositions don't win elections, governments lose them, is true. But it's also, I mean, quite difficult if Boris Johnson is prepared to do what the Times is saying he is thinking about doing, which is to put up taxes to pay for social care. How then, where do you go if you are Labour? I mean, and that I think is quite difficult. And I think one of the things I often think about Keir Starmer is that he often launches what would be a very good attack on George Osborne in 2010. But it doesn't work as an attack on this current government, because you've got this current government that has, you know, paid the wages of something like 11 million workers during the pandemic. It's talking about industrial policy, you know, state aid for industry, all this kind of thing. And where do Labour go in those circumstances? And what I meant about your pause is, I think this is part of what Keir Starmer is struggling with, which is, you know, he wants to show that Labour is under, to use his phrase, under new management, which means that you have to look more fiscally responsible than Jeremy Corbyn and his idea of, you know, spending money on and everything, you know, free broadband for all and all that stuff. But you're up against a Tory party that has a kind of big spending prime minister. And I think that is what is creating a lot of Starmer's problem, which is, where is the political space for him in this dynamic?
Yeah, I agree. Yes, my pause was obviously a very deep and informed pause. Thank you for that, James. I think also just Starmer has a real problem with trying to move on from just keeping his party together. I think that was something that he became obsessed with when he was Shadow Brexit Secretary. And that was something that was often said by his team when they were trying to persuade reluctant Labour MPs to support the latest nonsensical Labour amendment or motion in the latest Brexit row. They'd say, you know, I know this doesn't necessarily make a huge amount of sense, but we need to get the party together, bring the party together. And he's had a few, as you say, Labour Party under new management moments, including suspending Jeremy Corbyn. But I don't think that's really the big symbolic moment that some people thought it was going to be. I think that if he wants to define himself more clearly so that voters in these focus groups even know who he is, let alone what he stands for, he will need to upset some people. He'll need to define himself against certain things. Maybe not, you know, in as aggressive a way as some of the Blairites in his party might want, but certainly in a way that maybe earns him a few more enemies.
No, I thought you were a very perceptive thing for Coffee House about the kind of the Ed Miliband trap that Keir Starmer was in danger of falling into, which is that you hold the party together, but in doing that, that requires a certain lack of definition, a certain fuzziness about what you stand for. And that makes it that much harder to communicate with the public. And I think that is the risk of the trap that he is falling into. That was Coffee House Shots for today, Friday the 16th of July. Join us tomorrow for a special Saturday edition. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to Isabel Hardman for joining us.